our competitive advantage is the Midwest, where we have a network like no one else has, a network like we have. We know all the big players. We know all the brokers. We can't replicate our network anywhere else.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brand damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Javier Hinojo, your host of The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. And today I have Spencer Gray. He is in the Midwest in Indiana. No, Indianapolis. I forgot where you're at.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay, that's right. I got it right. I got it both right. Okay.
Exactly.
Awesome. So we're going to hit a couple of topics today on the show. He's got a really cool newsletter. I've actually checked it out and I signed up for it. So check that out. We're going to talk about that in the show notes as well. And we're going to talk about some of his lessons learned, what he does, what he's doing, and you know what he's got going on for next year. So he, in a big picture, they buy commercial real estate, and we'll let him explain what his company does and what his role is. And we will ask that question, what is the biggest mistake that he's made? So we'll definitely get to that one for sure. So Spencer, go ahead and introduce yourself.
And yeah,
tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really appreciate you having me on. I've been looking forward to coming on the show. It's a great capital. I started the business with my wife back in 2015. We had just sold a business. I've been a little bit of a serial entrepreneur, really, since as far back as I can remember. After we sold that business, kind of looking for what's kind of the next step, what's the next thing for us to do. And I had been investing in real estate on a small scale, kind of on the side. And I was like, I love this idea of, you know, creating generational wealth and cash flow. And it's such a scalable business. Why don't we build a business kind of surrounding investing in real estate? And the investment strategy that I thought made the most sense and still do to this day is investing in multifamily apartments. And so we, you know, kind of jumped in and really just started networking with anybody that would kind of have a coffee with us. Long story short, we ended up being able to co-sponsor quite a few projects over a couple of years, co-sponsored about a little over 4,000 apartment units throughout the Midwest. And it got to a point where I said, things are going well, but I think there's a couple things that I might do a little bit differently. I want to build out my own team. And so for the past, really, I'd say 2 years, I've been focused on building out our own team at Gray Capital, trying to grab some awesome, really smart real estate professionals kind of from around the Indianapolis area. And we're focused on stabilized, large multifamily apartments, typically 100 units and up, primarily in the Midwest. Again, like you said, we're based out of Indianapolis. We've got a lot of properties in the state of Indiana, but we're also in Ohio, Kentucky. We've invested in Tennessee, Georgia, a handful of other states. And again, stabilized assets, so no ground up development. And typically we're kind of in that light value add to core plus risk profile.
Okay, so explain light value add and core plus.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've done, start with kind of, you know, value add. You know, most people are familiar with the term, whether it's in general business or real estate, multifamily real estate. It's typically you're going to go in and you're going to renovate the interiors of the units most typically. So let's say you're going to invest about $10,000, new floors, new cabinets, new countertops, with the idea you're going to get some kind of increased rent premium on that renovation. So whether you're shooting for another $200 a month. So we've done quite a few of those. And what we learned is, you know, sometimes that risk premium is there or that rental premium, and sometimes it's not. And we had some success doing some lighter renovations, lighter value adds, where we're going in and not necessarily repositioning the entire asset, really tweaking it and making minor improvements. A lot of times focusing on management practices and managing the assets better, and then being a little bit more tactical. And so as a recent example, we closed on a project this last year, and most of the units had already been renovated, but the current owner had not fully executed their business plan in terms of bringing those units to market. So you can spend the money, but that doesn't mean you're going to get that rent the next day. I mean, you still have people living in these apartments. Their leases have to expire before they can turn over. So we were able to, you know, buy a property at a relative discount that had already been renovated, at least the interiors of the units. And then we went in to essentially continue to elevate the curb appeal and make it more attractive. So we added some more new amenities, such as like a grilling station, dog park, picnic area, renovated the clubhouse. And so just that leasing experience is much stronger. And we spent, you know, a couple $100,000 doing that versus spending over, if we wanted to do every single unit, we would have spent millions of dollars and we're getting a similar ROI. So that's more of a light value add, not a full reposition, trying to maintain a stabilized asset, continuing to be stable. Now, Core Plus, and a lot of that, what I was talking about was tactics, not necessarily strategy, not necessarily risk profile. Core Plus is typically a much more stable asset that you shouldn't have to put that many resources back into. Typically, they're newer assets. We typically think kind of, you know, mid-2000s and newer. And it's a similar strategy in terms of, you know, looking for management efficiencies. And then, you know, again, small things like whether it might be adding an amenity or might be kind of just giving the clubhouse a little bit of a cosmetic lift. Maybe it's like redoing the marketing. Maybe they're not good at marketing, or maybe they're spending too much on marketing. We've seen some opportunities really just cutting expenses, a handful of these assets. And the result is a lower risk profile, typically slightly less return on a Core Plus strategy. But what we try to identify is markets and assets in these markets that are being mispriced. So we're really getting a low risk investment, a low risk asset, but still that can produce some, you know, pretty attractive returns, whether that be, you know, the market's just discounting it or the current owners just have just let rents sit way below market for too long.
Awesome. Okay. So I want to kind of go back a little bit and talk about, you sold the business and then you said, I kind of like this real estate thing and I'm going to go ahead and co-sponsor some projects. Yeah. And you know, you co-sponsored a few, right? 4,000 units is not
a handful.
It's a handful for sure.
Yeah.
And then you say, hey, I'm going to decide to kind of start my own team. And so tell me what do you do now? Do you guys do the acquisition, the operations, raise capital, sign loans? So tell me what your team looks like and what do you guys?
We do all of that besides the actual kind of day-to-day property management at this point. So we're not signing leases, but we are very active in every other aspect of operations and kind of executing the business plan. So, you know, we find the deals, we raise the capital, we put the business plans together, we guarantee the loans. We manage the construction projects. We do all the asset management and really kind of steer the property. And then we have a third party property manager that, you know, handles the property accounting, has the, you know, leasing agent, property management on staff. And we'll probably bring property management in-house in the near future. We're not at the point where we feel like it's really accretive to what we do, mostly because we've got a great partner on the property management side. So we just feel like it's not been necessary. As soon as we can't kind of execute our business plan with our partner, it'll be necessary and we'll do it, but we're just not at that point yet. And we've just chosen to focus on, you know, what we feel like we're really good at. And property management is not, you know, we know we can do it, but we know our partner's probably better at it than we would be just starting out. So it's a pretty good relationship.
Yeah, that's awesome, right? You know, if you got that side of the business working, which is really, really, really important. And that takes also a lot of work, right, to do the property management. So if you got a good partner there on that side, you know, at some point you have to reevaluate, right? It depends how big you get. You're like, shall we do it in-house? Not in-house, or then you just kind of tackle that problem when it arrives.
Exactly. You know, and it's tough. We were thinking about bringing property management in-house last year because we're at scale. We could do it. And you know, that management fee is attractive. Like, oh, we can get that 3.5 and just bring that in-house. Why wouldn't we do that? Why are we paying somebody else, you know, $50,000-$100,000 a year? And then I started talking to and just having conversations with owners of property management companies and operators who had brought property management in-house. And they all kind of said the same thing. They're like, you know, it is nice to be able to, you know, fully control, you know, our staff and everything. That is nice. And that's why we did it, because of the control. It's not a profit center. In fact, we're losing money. You know, we're having to feed the management company almost every year. Not every, you know, not every company was like this, but I didn't speak to anyone where it was, you know, a profit center and they were typically spending more money than it was really bringing in. It's much more about being able to control the operations, control the business plan and the asset, which is still, if you can't execute your business plan, then, you know, the best business plan is worth nothing if you can't actually execute on it. But that's where we feel fortunate that we do have a business partner, a property management partner that is able to execute on what we want to do. And again, that'll probably change at some point. But for now, we've got a good thing going.
That's awesome. So I was looking at your website and you guys have invested in over 45 properties, over $1 billion worth of real estate. So you have your own team now. So tell me what your team looks like.
So in terms of, I guess, the first kind of key member that I brought on as a team member outside of my wife is my business partner, has been my business partner in other projects. We brought on a director of acquisitions and asset management. He had been doing kind of the same role at a very large multifamily operator here local in Indianapolis. I think they manage almost 20,000 units or so. A lot of experience on the acquisitions disposition side, as well as asset management. We also have a director of communications and marketing. Handles a lot of our back end work from our kind of investor side, as well as just all of our marketing, whether it's for our properties themselves or also marketing to investors. We have an investment associate who does a lot of the investor relations, but also kind of just helps out on asset management and just kind of other just real estate related tasks. We've got an analyst on board now as well, who's assisting with a lot of underwriting, kind of analyzing different scenarios for whether it's refinances, dispositions, as well on the acquisition side. And we're just now bringing on, he's going to be starting here in the next week or so, a chief financial controller, really to kind of head up our kind of our accounting division. Been using kind of third party accountants and bookkeepers, and we probably still will, but we needed to bring somebody in house. So that's the scope of the team. We're going to be bringing on a project manager soon too. So we're hiring a lot of people, hopefully in the next couple of months. So we're continuing to grow.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you guys expanded to a couple other states, which you said was Kentucky, Tennessee, and Ohio.
Correct.
And Georgia.
Correct. And when we've sold the asset in Georgia, we're in the process of selling our assets in Tennessee right now. So right in the bulk of the portfolio is in Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky.
Okay. And you guys going to still go look in Tennessee, Georgia, or you guys going to stay closer to home?
You know, it depends. I mean, we really like Chattanooga in Tennessee. We're really looking at Chattanooga very closely. You know, Nashville, we like the idea of Nashville, but it's a little bit hot. We typically are going after a little bit smaller markets that are a little bit more off the radar, more secondary and tertiary. Georgia, if there's opportunities, you know, we're going to take a look at it. We're trying to focus a little bit more, though, just on kind of the Midwest, kind of the states that are within, you know, really a 4 to 6 hour kind of drive of where we are based, a little bit in Tennessee. And then we're also looking in kind of the Kansas City area as well as kind of another location to expand into. And then potentially, and this is kind of way out there, but we're looking a lot at Tucson, Arizona as well. My mom lives out there, so I spent a decent amount of time out in Tucson. I've been learning the market, and it's got some incredible fundamentals, a lot of the similar drivers that Phoenix has. Yep. And it's got seeing a lot of spillover from Phoenix as well. So those are kind of the markets that we're focused on. Our niche, though, is the Midwest. And because, you know, there's folks, I mean, like you're in the Carolinas, which is it's an incredible markets, you know, in Raleigh and that whole area, there's so much great growth. And then there's folks like you and other operators that they know like the back of your hand. And like, we don't have a competitive advantage in those markets. Our competitive advantage is the Midwest, where we have a network like just like anybody else. No one else has a network like we have. We know all the big players. We know all the brokers. We can't replicate our network anywhere else. And so that's where we're able to, you know, find some great opportunities and, you know, just be able to kind of step outside and, you know, find some really great deals. And so like when we look at really high growth markets that are very popular for investment, like the Carolinas or Atlanta or Nashville or Austin, Texas or Dallas, it's great growth, but you know, it's you got to take a number and, you know, wait in line. And we know we can make some great returns happen in our backyard. And so I'd rather kind of just have our niche being in what we know and what we continue to be successful at.
That's awesome. And kind of one thing that I also hear from you is, that you will, you know, you do pivot, right? Like, hey, I need to hire this. I did this for a while.
Oh yeah.
So, I co-sponsor now. I brought my own team. So, you know,
I've pivoted a handful of times in my life. You know, now I feel like, I don't know if I want to say formula, but a good strategy. It's something that we've been repeating. We've been doing it really well. But I mean, I didn't even get it. I mean, I went to music school. I've started multiple businesses. I was in the craft beer industry, real estate. And so, yeah, I've pivoted a handful of times. But I've been pretty happy, though, the past, you know, really kind of 5, going on 6 years, really more or less doing the same thing outside of, you know, kind of building out our own internal team, but more or less focused as much as I can be.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Thank you. Thanks, Spencer, for kind of for telling us how the team's broken down and what you got going on.
Yeah, sure thing.
Right behind my screen here where I see the Gray Report, GRAY report.com. So tell me about that. Is that new or that's been up for a while?
It's relatively new, probably in the past 6 months or so. The Gray Report website, grayreport.com, is new. And where that started is about, I guess, 18 months ago. And we were kind of looking for something to do to kind of bring attention to what we were doing. And I was like, well, why don't we start a newsletter? The newsletters kind of seem lame, but I was like, I think that there's a need for a newsletter that'll deliver all of these research reports that come out from all the multifamily brokerage shops and research firms, because personally, I had a hard time kind of finding out when these reports were released. They don't really disseminate them that well. I find one that's like a month late and I'm like, I wish I would have read this a month ago. And I'm like, well, why don't we just actively search these things out? And as soon as they come out, let's aggregate it and compile it and just start sending a newsletter where we're just sending out all this research and data just every week. And so we started doing that and it really started resonating with a lot of people. And so we've continued to do it. We've kind of developed it over time. And as an extension, I was like, well, why are we just sending this out once a week? Why don't we make a website that just aggregates all the information? We can automate a lot of it with RSS feeds and then a couple of virtual assistants. Let's just build something that's going to constantly update, you know, throughout the day, that's going to be pulling all the latest research reports, any really article and opinion piece related to the multifamily industry, real estate, and then the economy. Those are kind of the three buckets in that order: multifamily, real estate, and the economy. And then, you know, we'll also, you know, throw on trending, you know, podcasts, you know, YouTube videos, you know, the third-party content, as well as our own original content. And then we've kind of have just the grayreport.com was built to kind of house all that information.
Oh, so you started off right away saying, hey, you were looking for different reports, and sometimes you read them a month late and you're trying to compile them. And when I opened up your website, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'm glad this is here. I'm like, oh, dang, I wish I had, like, it's like an all-in-one.
Yeah.
I see the ticker on the right side. I'm like, let me go check my crypto.
Exactly.
Video on a 1031 exchange. And I actually see a podcast in here from somebody I know. I'm like, oh, I know that guy.
You know, exactly.
So pretty cool.
We were trying to really make kind of a one-stop shop of like, all right, I'm into, you know, multifamily investing. It's a niche thing, but you know, it's really popular. People really get into it, whether they're, you know, passive investors, LPs, syndicators, aspiring syndicators. And, you know, there's a handful of, you know, outlets that are reporting on this stuff and writing articles, but we felt like there wasn't a really good aggregator. And so we call it a multifamily intelligence aggregator, which is really just a fancy name for, you know, a website that's just, you know, bringing in content. But yeah, we thought it would be a useful tool. And again, really because something that what we wanted, and then we're like, hey, let's put it out there. And if people like it, that's great. If not, we'll just keep doing it. And the website, it's still catching on. But the newsletter is what we've gotten the most feedback from, of just being a very, you know, valuable resource that people are getting, you know, once a week. Of if you didn't read anything else during a given week, if you just read the Gray Report newsletter on Thursdays, you know, you'd be able to stay up to date with at least what's going on kind of in the multifamily world.
Yeah. I kind of like the kind of one shop stop, right? Cause I have like 20 different bookmarks, you know, I'm like, I forget. Right. So
exactly.
As soon as I looked at it, I'm like, okay, I'm seeing student housing, I'm seeing New York rents, I'm looking at this, I'm looking at that. It's just pretty cool. So,
yeah, no, appreciate you. I know awesome. It pulls in all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So you guys out there that are listening, make sure you sign up for that. And it's pretty cool. Grayreport.com, grayreport.com. All right. So, Spencer, this is the naked truth about real estate investing. And I am going to ask you the question, what is biggest lesson learned, biggest mistake that you have made?
Yeah. You know, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this. Like, you know, what's my biggest mistake? And I've made a lot of different mistakes. I try not to, you know, have a lot of regrets though, you know, because it's like things happen for a reason and I am where I am, you know, because of some of those mistakes and lessons learned. One mistake though, that's happened recently. And so it's probably not the biggest mistake of my career, but it's the one that's like it's like the rawest and the freshest is we were pursuing an acquisition earlier this year, and it would have been the biggest acquisition of our company. It was a $115 million project, you know, apartments and mixed use development. It was an entire district. Like, we were buying basically like a whole district of this downtown, this suburban Indianapolis. And we had a good relationship with the seller, which was also the developer, the brokers. We were trying to put all the pieces in place. And one of the things, you know, I'm still very much solely focused on is, you know, raising capital and getting the funds ready for a project. You know, I've brought on, like I said, you know, director of acquisitions and asset management. So he's kind of leading kind of the acquisitions charge. it's my job to make sure we've got the money to actually, you know, pay for the asset. And when we were getting close to kind of the offers being due, we were, you know, trying to kind of, you know, arrange the capital and trying to have conversations, because we knew that if we went to the best and final interview, which is the usually the phone call, once they've already gotten through a few rounds of bidding of, okay, we're only talking to, you know, three groups, and we're going to, the owner's going to ask you guys a couple of questions of, you know, how are you going to close on it? Questions about the terms. And I knew that we needed to have, you know, a good, you know, story for where our equity was going to come from. And I was anticipating that we were going to have some confirmations from a couple different large equity groups, a family office and a private equity group. And, you know, at the end of the day, they decided that it wasn't right for them, and, you know, they weren't going to participate. And we had backup options that I had, just hadn't pursued. And at the end of the day, we get to this best and final offer. And I had to say, if I'm always honest, you could say you've got all the money ready to go, but I'm just, I told them just the honest story of, you know, look, you know, we don't have all the equity committed. You know, it was going to be about $30 million of equity.
Yep.
And I'm like, we don't have everything committed. I'm confident I can get it done, but I'm going to need, you know, a week basically to get this equity, at least a week, if not 2 weeks. Our purchase price was matched the other bidder. Terms were the same. We ended up losing the deal basically because we didn't have everything lined up, ready to go. And this other group had a fund. They had cash in the bank ready to deploy. And they're like, they told us, the broker and the seller told us, we wanted to choose you all, but the other buyer was a sure thing. They had the money and you guys had to go raise the money. And we just didn't want to take that risk. You know, this is a $115 million transaction. We don't want to wait around while you figure it out. And frankly, a lot of the other projects that we've been able to close, we have been able to just figure out because the seller said that was fine. And we have a track record of doing it. We've never not closed on a project. We've always been able to, you know, get it done. And so I told myself and my team, and we were all very disappointed because this was going to be kind of a game. We thought it could be a game changer for us. And it really, it sat on my shoulders. Like, this is no one else's fault or responsibility. It's 100% on me. It's like, you know, getting the money ready to go. I thought I was going to have it there and I didn't have a plan B or a plan C. And, you know, we didn't get this deal because I didn't have it all, you know, arranged. And I said, you know, this isn't going to happen again. We're going to switch to a fund model so we can have the funds committed, ready to go. Because I'd been benchmarking other groups that had switched to a fund and been very successful for them. Like, there's no longer a debate of whether if this is something we're going to do, we're going to the fund. That way, when we have a conversation with a seller, I can say, we've got a fund, we've got X amount of million committed, we're in the bank, we're ready to close, and we can close quick. We can be competitive. And so, you know, it's more of a lesson learned. I mean, we're still in the process of putting the fund together and everything, but, you know, it's hard to explain. You know, we thought that we were going to, you know, get that deal. And that's probably another lesson of no one ever owes us anything. And, you know, like the brokers don't owe us the deal. The seller doesn't, no one owes us anything, but, you know, we were still disappointed thinking that, hey, that deal should have been ours. Things happen and, you know, we're going to get better because of it. But, you know, lessons learned.
Hey, look, you got into the final round, the top two on a $150 million project.
115.
Okay. Yeah. So, that's a big, I mean, that's a big step, right? I mean, that's the big boys right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And, you know, are we supposed to be at the table? I don't know. No one hasn't told us to not sit down at the table, but we kind of keep showing up. And, you know, we know that, all right, well, if we keep showing up, we'll get one day.
Yeah, you're going to eat eventually. Somebody's going to serve you food and you're going to be like, thank you so much. You're going to have
one day.
You're going to have a great dinner. So
exactly. But sure, you got to show up though.
You got to be there, right? Definitely got to be there. So that's awesome. That's a great story. And best of luck with the fund when you get that rolling, because for sure that definitely does make a huge difference.
Yep. Q1 22 be launched.
All right. Q1 22. Do you guys have a name for it yet?
So we're in between. I don't know, maybe you can give me your opinion. So we're in between the Gray Fund or Gray Capital Strategic Income Fund.
I would say keep it shorter. Shorter is probably better.
That's what I think too.
Everything's like, you got like Gray Capital LLC, you got the Gray Report.
Right? So yeah, Gray Fund, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Something like that. Something has got to do with, you know, gray and then something.
I think so. Okay, yeah. So decision's been made. There you appreciate go.
Yeah, keep it short. Everything else is short. Gray report.
Exactly.
Gray capital. Exactly. Right. The gray fund. Right.
Yeah. Let's keep it consistent.
Oh, yeah. There you go. We're almost done. And I am actually, this is my favorite part of the interview. So I'm going to ask you three random questions.
All right.
That's a roulette. Three random questions. Got nothing to do with business. Just random questions about Spencer Gray. So we can, the audience can make sure you're not a robot. You're actually a real person. All right.
It's a good test. I don't know. Was the turning test?
There we go. So we're going to just spin the wheel. Let's see what we get.
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. Here we go with the first question for Spencer Gray on the Naked Truth Roulette. All right. If you can pick any other time in history, either the past or the future, what time would you live in?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I think living in, and I don't know why I say this, I think in the mid to late 60s, probably mid 60s, United States during kind of the whole, you know, cultural revolution would be pretty fascinating. There's probably other fascinating times, but, you know, so many things happened kind of in that mid to late, you know, 60s period, really kind of, you know, 67 to, you know, 70. And a lot of it was turmoil. But it was a fascinating period, I think, in history. And also, I love the music of that era. So I guess, yeah, mid to late 60s. Awesome. A lot of fun.
All right. Mid 60s, early 70s for you. Okay, great. All right, here we go. Question number two. Favorite quote.
Favorite quote. One quote that, you know, got me through the pandemic last year, 2020, you know, it's just the classic Warren Buffett quote of, you know, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. Yeah, that one at least got me through last year.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
It's a classic.
Yep. All right, here we go. Last question for you. All right, I think this is, I haven't asked this one in a while.
Have you ever
cried in a movie?
Oh, I feel as though I've gotten older. I don't know if it's because I have kids now. I find myself crying
all the time
at random parts in movies where I'm like, I don't know why I have like an emotional connection to this at all, but I feel myself tearing up, and I don't know if it's like subliminal thing they do in the movies, but I am not ashamed to say 100% I have cried at movies and times where it's probably not appropriate to cry, but. Yes.
Well, awesome. I appreciate you survived the Naked Truth Roulette.
That's awesome.
And thank you for answering those questions. So,
and absolutely.
I cry all the time too. So before we let you go, what's a good way to people get a hold of you? And if you have any last comments.
You know, we're pretty easy to get a hold of. Yeah. If you just, you know, Google Gray Capital will pop up. We're on LinkedIn, Bigger Pockets. Feel free to shoot me an email or message, Spencer@graycapitalllc.com. And if you would like to sign up for the Gray Report newsletter, it's graycapitalllc.com/newsletter.
So awesome. I signed up, everybody. So go ahead and sign up for it. It's got a kind of all in one. It's pretty cool. So
exactly.
Spencer, I appreciate your time. And you guys out there, I'm Javier, your host. Don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel, or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's a really cool Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.